The reading is the parable of the sower, and it's chapter 13 of Matthew, and you can find that on page 13 in the Pew Bibles. That same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat beside the lake. Such great crowds gathered around him, and he got into a boat and sat there, while the whole crowd stood on the beach. And he told them many things in parables, saying, "Listen, a sower went out to sow. And as he sowed, some seeds fell on the path, and the birds came and ate them up. Other seeds fell on rocky ground, where they did not have much soil, and they sprang up quickly, since they had no depth of soil. But when the sun rose, they were scorched, and since they had no root, they withered away. Other seeds fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. Other seeds fell on good soil and brought forth grain, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. Let anyone with ears listen. Then the disciples came and asked him, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" He answered, "To you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For to those who have, more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away." The reason I speak to them in parables is that seeing they do not perceive, and hearing they do not listen, nor do they understand. With them, indeed, is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah that says, "You will indeed listen, but never understand. And you will indeed look, but never perceive. For this people's heart has grown dull, and their ears are hard of hearing, and they have shut their eyes, so that they might not look with their eyes and listen with their ears and understand with their heart and turn, and I would heal them. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. Truly I tell you, many prophets and righteous people longed to see what you see, but did not see it, and to hear what you hear, but did not hear it." Hear then the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what is sown in the heart. This is what was sown on the path. As for what was sown on rocky ground, this is the one who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. Yet such a person has no root, but endures only for a while. And when trouble or persecution arises on account of the word, that person immediately falls away. As for what was sown among the thorns, this is the one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the lure of wealth choke the word, and it yields nothing. But as for what was sown on good soil, this is the one who hears the word and understands it, who indeed bears fruit and yields. In one case, 100-fold, in another, 60, and in another, 30. This is the word of the Lord.
And now for your joy and delectation, I'm going to introduce you to Tim Foggin from the Bible Society up in Swindon, who's going to come and talk to us. And there will be time afterwards for questions, so if you've got something that's on your mind, Tim's your man.
Thank you, Tim. Pleasure. Morning, everyone. What a privilege it is to be here with you on this Bible Sunday morning. We're camping at the moment. And I can just tell you what a blessing it is to be in a warm, dry space. So I'm very encouraged by that. And it seems like I also need to start with an apology. I only just learned a couple of days ago and reminded this morning that it seems like we've stolen Annabelle from you. So apologies for that. We haven't met yet, Annabelle, but I look forward to seeing you in the office soon. My name is Tim Foggan. I work as the International Program Manager for the Bible Society of England and Wales. And no doubt some of you might be following the Rugby World Cup at this time. And I think if a particular team gets through as we speak, we might have some internal conflict in the office. So I'm hoping the Springboks will do what will avoid that. I am, as you can hear, slightly biased in that regard. Our work is very much divided into a domestic context, as you will be well aware, and an international context. And I'm really going to be sharing more with you this morning about the work in the international context with very much reference to the Middle East. I primarily work or run the mission in the Middle East, and so this morning is about our reflections of the work in the Middle East, but also my personal learning as a Christian in the West in relation to the text of James 1, verse 2 to 3. Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. This is never an easy text for us to relate to, especially to appreciate the concept of joy and being tested in the same experience. It just doesn't sit that well with my Western cultural references, at least. My sense is God seems to be incredibly at work in this context of ongoing chaos and trauma in the Middle East at this time. My colleagues often tell me that for them this is a window of opportunity and they must use it well. Many people of other faiths at this time are questioning and reflecting. It's a time when Christianity is being explored by others for a variety of reasons, and most are not only empathetic to their Christian brothers and sisters, but they are in awe at their resilience and perseverance, the way in which they are being sustained at this very difficult time. The Bible has been instrumental in the Middle East. It's where it began. God has spoken to so many through his word. For Christians, it has been a real source of support and encouragement. For many others, it has been the reason or tool for them coming to faith. I once asked a young Christian refugee woman we met in Jordan, who, like many others who had been forced to leave her home and walked with some of her family from Aleppo in Syria and had a tragedy of traumatic experiences along the way, which I'm going to go into, what verse it is that she most clung to during this very difficult experience. And she started reciting Psalm 13 to me in Arabic, which fell on deaf ears, but we got the translation. It goes like this: How long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? Look on me and answer, Lord my God. Give light to my eyes, or I will sleep in death. and my enemy will say, I have overcome him, and my foes will rejoice when I fall. But I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me. I couldn't help thinking of my own daughter at this time. And it was only then that I realized the enormity of this tragedy and also the depth of her faith. The moment was filled with emotion, as you can imagine. God has given his people an amazing resilience, an ability to overcome the trials that have been brought upon them. If I can just take a step back for a moment, what is it we're trying to do in each of these regions? We work primarily across Africa, China, and the Middle East, but it's not limited to that. But that's where our focus is at this particular time. And we tend to focus in on those countries that are facing hard and difficult experiences with regard to their belief. In China, we want to see a church that is properly equipped in times of increasing pressure. In Africa, we want to see a church that is inspiring and provoking spiritual and cultural change in contemporary life. In the Middle East, we want to see a church equipping Christian communities to be a witnessing presence. In other words, the hands and feet of Christ at this very difficult time. We work primarily in the Levant. I'm not sure if the slides are visible to your folk on my right. Can you see? Primarily on the right, in the Levant, which is Turkey, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq. But we do have work that goes beyond that into an area which we refer to as the Bible Lands. And to some extent, we support Bible societies that are present in countries such as Morocco, Algeria, and we have a very large Bible society in Egypt. You may or may not know there's more Christians in Egypt than there is in the whole of the Middle East put together. The Middle East population is around about 3-4% Christians at this time. It dropped slightly for various obvious reasons. The next slide, for me, really captures our mission in the Middle East. And it goes like this, and it was cited by an Iraqi church leader a year or two back when he says, Christians are helping Muslims, Yazidis, Sabaeans, everyone. In Baghdad, the church was the first to help. We have an idea, we are not just for us, but we're for the weak, we're for the broken, we give our hand, and we listen to the other. Now, these next couple of slides are probably slides or images that we're more familiar with in terms of what we're fed from the media. This is a church in Erbil in northern Iraq, but it resembles many situations of destruction around Syria and Iraq. This is a Christian book fair. This particular one is in Jordan, but they take place throughout the Middle East, even in places such as Turkey. They do what any Christian bookshop would do. But they're also where colleagues make themselves available for the many questions that come in from the majority Muslim community. Sales are commonplace, and even in these discussions, people from other faiths begin the journey of giving their lives to God. Conversion in the Middle East is fraught with danger. It will mean a life of severe prejudice. But it is commonplace. I will never forget a conversation I had with an Iraqi refugee couple who left Karakosh and fled to Erbil. Their home was burnt by ISIS, and there was no reason left for them to remain. They had to sleep rough en route, and when they reached Erbil, they stayed in a makeshift playground area where a few other refugees had settled. And after 3 weeks, they decided to walk to Amman, which is many miles away. And she said something to me as we were leaving that stuck with me, that in order to follow Christ, she would do it all again. I've heard many stories like these and sat with these people and always been amazed at their faith amidst these trials and pressure. I recall another situation where I met a Syrian refugee family staying in a make-do accommodation in Jordan, whose population now is one-third displaced people. I think they've got a population of around about 4 million, and when you have a population of 4 million, increasing it overnight, almost as such, with one-third has quite an impact on you. She and her family had a story to tell. And as employment is not allowed for refugees in these most host countries, I wondered what next? Where were they going thereafter? And so my question to her was, what is your plan from here? Most refugees in this situation have applied to various countries and moved to Germany, Australia, our own, and various others. She said to me in the utmost of conviction, she has no need for a plan anymore. God will show her what tomorrow will look like. And she doesn't need any more than that. Many in the Middle East consider their trials as a blessing. I'm told it keeps them focused on what's important. And although persecuted, and perhaps because persecuted, they feel this real proximity and closeness to God. They do need support from their fellow Christians around the world, though, which is where our mission comes in. The next couple of slides really speak to the how part of the mission. This is a youth competition that is run throughout a number of Middle Eastern countries where they engage the youth in a variety of ways, often with online competitions. They have Bible quizzes. I attended one not so long ago in Nazareth, which was a wonderful experience. I couldn't believe how many people were there, and I couldn't believe the hunger and the thirst to understand and know their biblical verses as well as they do. This is something that takes place again throughout, again, a lot of the countries that we work in, and it effectively is support to young families. Families who have recently either come to know God, who have been Christians for some time, and just need that real deep equipping. A lot of our work involves primarily Bible distribution, training of church leadership, Christian support for young families, Sunday school training, especially Syria at this particular time where a lot of teachers have left the country, and there's a massive vacuum in terms of people being able to take over their space. So we have a large program of Sunday school training where we have people coming from Lebanon into Syria to equip people to continue a program of Sunday school training. And they call it Sunday school, even though a lot of it might take place on a Friday or even on a Saturday, which is interesting enough. Trauma healing is probably one of our biggest programs in the Middle East. We have a lot of support from the American Bible Society and various other Bible societies around the world on this. And it's a time when Christians can go out and engage with whoever. People of other faiths, fellow Christians. The majority of displaced people are not Christians, but Muslims. And this is a real opportunity to reach out to people who are experiencing multiple layers of trauma in their lives. I heard an interesting fact the other day that in a church in Madaba, which is in southern Jordan, the minister who leads that says to me he has more Muslims in his church now than he has Christians. And this is becoming a real problem for the Christians. And he was genuinely seeking some sincere guidance on this. These are some of the issues that they're starting to face. This last slide is a festival that the Jordanian Society put together last year. And it effectively looks to gather all the churches in the country, from the Orthodox, Coptics, through to the Protestants. And it was just a day in which all Christians could gather and be in the same space and worship our Lord Jesus Christ. And it was a huge success. It was had to be ticketed. It was fully sold out. It was booked. There were tickets on sale. There was a lot of cost to be covered, and we did support it. You can see the numbers of youth that were present. And unfortunately, it wasn't able to be repeated again this year as the authorities closed it down or didn't provide permission for it to go ahead. So that was the enormity of its success. What I found really interesting was the name that the Jordanian Bible Society had given this festival. You'll see it up there on the left if you can read it. It's Watad. It's an Arabic word. And it literally means tent peg. I mentioned a little bit earlier, we're still camping. So this is quite fresh for me. It's an analogy. The more you put pressure on the tent peg, the more you hammer the tent peg into the ground, the firmer the tent remains in the ground. And they relate this analogy to themselves in that the more pressure we as Christians receive, the more resilient we become. And I found that really quite touching, and it's had an impact on my faith ever since, because we're inevitably looking to avoid pressure, avoid our trials. This kind of sums up my experiences working in that context. And each time I go back, I am so encouraged how these people do not want to be without this pressure, but they really want to just be in a time of peace, but also in a time where they can remain focused around worshiping and being part of the Christian faith. I did have another slide here that involved a short video for you, but I don't think it's there. And I think at this point it might be useful for us to go into any questions. You may have questions with regard to our mission in China. You may have questions with regard to our work in Africa or the Middle East. If there's anything you want to ask, this would be a good time. Yes, yes.
We talked about the church
Yes. 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 It's a very, very good question. And as I did mention earlier, it's very, very difficult to be a converted Muslim in the Middle East. However, the short answer to that is they're what we call seekers. So the people who are coming into the church who've made it quite clear that they are seeking, but they are not converted. But I think my sense has been there are people who are just coming into a space who sense God's love. And they just want to be part of this community of people who show them love and who reach out to them. So seekers, but very much people who are still probably wearing their Muslim dress, although a lot of Christians would probably look like Muslims as well in some of these spaces. But in short, yes, they would be seekers, absolutely. Mm. Yes, sir. I've just had the privilege of spending the last week with our fellow colleagues from the Chinese partnership, and so learning more and more about that. Yes, is the answer to that. The way in which the church is structured in China is there's the house church, and then there's the accepted state churches. And the state churches are very much open, and people talk about Christianity very openly. The house churches tend to take a little bit more scrutiny, and the more evangelical of the house churches tend to sort of have that scrutiny ramped up a bit. What's happening in China is something they call, they're trying to create a sinicized church. And this means they're looking to create a Chinese version of Christianity. And you may well ask, what does that look like? Well, we might be here for a bit longer than that, than we've got time for. But effectively, there definitely is a window of opportunity that is still open in China at this time. But what the what the state is very much concerned about is when Christians tend to move into the advocacy or political space in China at this crucial period. So if you're purely worshipping and worshipping within the church, then that is acceptable. I believe there's a new law that's come out that you cannot evangelize people under the age of 16. And so being evangelical outside of your church is something you would need to be very cautious about. But yes, there's a lot of the church is growing enormously in China, enormously so. I think that the three areas of growth in the world that are experiencing this level of growth are Algeria, where churches have recently just been, some churches have been closed down in these last couple of weeks, China, and then the other one would be Morocco and also Iran. Yes. Yeah, I am aware of him. I do not know any update status on him at all, I'm afraid to say. Yeah. Sorry, can't help you on that one. Yeah. Yes. Thank you for asking that question. Okay, the question was, what would you like us to pray for? And if they were receiving this, because it's a question that's asked to them many, many times, I think it would be peace, would be the first thing. I think an end to the war, it might differentiate in terms of whether we're in Syria or whether we're in Jordan, Lebanon. I think certainly our colleagues in Syria are looking for an end to the war. They desperately need peace. They desperately want to get on with just normal life. They desperately want their children to be able to go back to school in a normal way, back to university, and just start living normal life. Children of the age of 7 and under don't know what normal life looks like. So that would be one thing. The other thing would be for their continued resilience, their ability to continue to live in this very difficult context of being a minority. In some cases, we've got Christians living in double minorities, such as in Palestine. But Christians in the Middle East are around about 3 to 4%, doesn't matter which country you go to. That only changes slightly if you go to Egypt. But they're a minority. It's a difficult thing to live in a minority. And so they would be looking for prayer around that as well, how their faith could become accepted and how they could become normal, active citizens within their own country, within their own societies. And they would very much welcome your prayer in that. Thank you. Thank you very much for your time. I'll leave that there for you. And your prayers. Amen.